Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
He's basically on the path to be the best player in the world.
Probably the most fun player in the world when he's in full flow.
He's so good to watch. For Barcelona, it'd be such a huge loss.
Welcome back to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and join me today to discuss the latest deals in the transfer market and a few pre-season friendlies is Nick English. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm good. How are you, Greg?
Not bad at all. Ollie Young Miles is here as well.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
I'm not bad. So let's get straight to business. How the week when West Ham have finally done some business. Javier Hernandez, signed, sealed, delivered, he's theirs. Joe Hart has been brought in on loan as well to play in goal from Manchester City, the much maligned Joe Hart, you could say. And Marko Arnautović is literally moments away from securing his move to West Ham, I believe for some ridiculous amount of money, about 50 million.
I think it's including his wages.
Oh, really?
It comes up to that. I think it's 24.
24, yeah.
Okay, so it's one of those kind of like Kyle Walker's worth 100 million.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I see. But still, in this market, even with the wages as well, that's a lot of money for a player like Marko Arnautović, isn't it?
Well, the thing is that Arnautović has been in a team for the last three seasons where...
Most footballers have.
This is true. He's been in a team for the last three seasons where with about 10 games left, there's nothing left to play for. You put him in a side where there's like an actual... It might be the same situation at West Ham, but I think he's unfairly labelled as inconsistent, Arnautović. I think he's a definite step up on what they've already got, and he's a perfect foil for who they'll probably have on the other wing, which is Lanzini, and he's definitely an upgrade on Fuguli, who hasn't really set the Premier League alight. I think Hernandez is the one out of that, which is an amazing get. I mean, that's an amazing get for West Ham. I mean, they finished the last five seasons 11th, 7th, 12th, 13th, 10th, and they've got Javier Hernandez, a guy who's been really unlucky in his career, essentially. He was never first choice at United. The Real Madrid loan, he actually did quite well, even though it was half a season.
Mexican Michael Owen.
At Leverkusen, he's been the top scorer at that side for the last two seasons, even though they've been declining. Last season was really poor for Leverkusen. He still managed to get 11 goals. He's just looking for the right situation, and West Ham could be the right one. And, you know, if he strikes up a partnership with Andy Carroll, it's little and large to a bit of a hyperbolic degree, but it's a really good get. But for West Ham, Joe Hart to West Ham is just like the perfect situation for everyone there, so I think West Ham have done really, really well there. I think that's three really good signings.
I remember a few weeks ago, Mohamed Butt was on the podcast and said that Romelu Lukaku is like a 6'3" Javier Hernandez. So is Javier Hernandez a 5'9" Romelu Lukaku, Ollie?
I'm not sure about that. I think Lukaku's got a bit more to his game. Hernandez is a poacher, isn't he? He comes alive in the area. He's one of those sort of old-fashioned centre-forwards in many ways. But yeah, I agree with Nick, actually. I think West Ham have actually done quite good business. And Arnautović is a big fee, but, you know, you're getting 10 goals, maybe 6 or 7 assists out of him. So, you know, it's a solid signing. And I think as well, Bilic has probably learned from last summer when they brought in loads of players from abroad who didn't settle into the side or into the Premier League. And he's just brought players that know the league inside out. Hernandez, Hart, Arnautović, Zabaleta. There's a lot of Premier League experience there.
And Zabaleta is actually a really interesting one because they got Arbeloa came in last season, didn't they? Now retired, and they sold James Tonkins to Crystal Palace. And after injuries, they just literally didn't have a functioning right back.
Well, he clearly doesn't fancy Sam Byram at all. But yeah, West Ham, I mean, significant improvement is needed. They really missed Payet when he left. And I think, you know, he's just trying to tighten up that side with experience, and that's what they've gone for this summer.
They've also picked up three players that are technically, in terms of age, at the peak of their powers. Hernandez is still only 29, Arnautović is 28, Joe Hart is 31,
which is his baby years.
Is he a bit younger than that? So if it's a really low risk situation. Okay, they're probably like crippling their wage bill, but it's totally worth it for a good tilt at picking up maybe that seventh spot, which belongs to Everton at the moment.
Well, that's East London sorted. We're going to move west now. Alvaro Morata has secured his move to Chelsea for a new record-breaking fee for a Spanish footballer. Bakayoko's also confirmed, and Conte has got a pay rise put into bed, always talk that he might be moving on. Although, interestingly, this new contract he signed isn't an extension, so he's not added any more kind of years onto his deal, which some people have queried a little bit. We've had a question through from Andrew Christiansen, no relation to Andreas, I don't think. What do we make of Morata as a Costa replacement, and what else does Chelsea need this summer to be successful in next season?
Well, Costa's form as being a world-class striker before coming to Chelsea is probably one of the biggest myths in the history of the club. I mean, before he joined, he had 64 goals in 135 appearances. He joined age 25, even though he looked about 35. He only scored more than 10 league goals in a single season once, and that was the season before he joined. So it's not like they bought a guy who was banging in 30 goals a season for 5 years. That wasn't the case at all. You know, Morata's got 40 goals in 126 senior club appearances. 77 of those are as a sub. So, yeah, it's a huge fee. And is he the same as Lukaku? Like, that debate's going to rage on all summer. It's going to be really, really tiresome. But is he of a significantly lower standard than Costa when he arrived at the club? No. Conte's a good judge of talent. He obviously, you know, he probably did want Lukaku. He couldn't get him. You know, you're never going to win a bidding war with Man United, who are the richest club in the world. He's got Morata, who's always impressed. You know, whenever anybody ever watches him play, they think, God, this guy's got the lot. He hasn't got the pedigree, but now he's got a chance to get the pedigree.
We look at the stats there in terms of goals, Ollie, and Chelsea fans always talk about it's Costa's like presence in the final third, the menace, the aggression, that kind of stepping on defenders' toes that he brings. Those kind of intangible qualities that are harder to really quantify in a signing. Morata is a very good all-rounder, very technically astute footballer. But is he going to have that edge that Chelsea have relied on from Costa?
He's not like Costa, but then no one's like Costa. He's got, like, you know, I mean, basically he's the most aggressive striker you're ever going to see. I mean, he's so combative for a centre forward. And Morata, as you said, isn't really like that. He's a lot more measured, a lot more calm. But he's pretty much an all-round striker. Considering he's 24 as well, he's only going to get better. And he's a big game player as well, which is what Costa was for Chelsea last year. Costa won Chelsea 3 or 4 games last season, which effectively got them the title. And Morata, I think, can do similar. You know, if you look at his record for Real Madrid last year, he scored a goal every, I can't remember, I think it was 1.1 goals every 90 minutes he played. Yeah. He won them 13 points in La Liga. So this is a guy who, you know, despite playing a backup role pretty much his entire club career, has a very good pedigree in sort of making defining moments and game-changing moments in the season. So I think it's a good signing. And, you know, Conte obviously knows him well from his 2 years in Juventus, and it was after Conte went. But I think he's a player that everywhere he's been, he's sort of adapted well, and I think it's a really good signing for them.
The other part of that question was, what else does Chelsea need? I'd say the only position they haven't really properly reinforced yet is wing-backs. A lot of talk about Danilo, Alexandre, all these kind of targets. If they don't get someone in to kind of upgrade the flanks, are they going to be a bit of trouble next year, Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not so much first team solutions. Marcos Alonso, I think they could get away with it. Moses had a very, very good season, but tailed off towards the end of that
Champions
season.
Champions League football, though, isn't it? That's the thing.
Yeah, it feels like they either need an upgrade or better backups. Yeah. So I do wonder about that. I do wonder if it's just going to be Azpilicueta at left wing back. That makes a lot of sense. But then right wing back, what's the plan there?
But even then, Azpilicueta, when he has played at the wing backs, he's been a much more conservative.
Yeah, he's a much more conservative, but I don't think Conte is going to mind that because he's so tactically intelligent that it's worthwhile foregoing that attacking option, as it were.
And we talked on the pod before, Ollie, about the kind of the logjam of talent they now have at centre back, especially with Rudiger also signed. Obviously, Christensen's come back. I know you're a big fan of him as well. But Kurt Zouma has been sent out on loan for the season to go and join Ryan Shawcross in a kind of, you know, the perfect footballing tag team solution you could want at centre-back at Stoke City. How's that going to go?
It makes sense in that he's just come back from a really bad knee injury. Needs regular football. He's not going to get that at Chelsea. But again, I mean, they've let him and Nathan Ake go this summer. Two very, very good young centre-backs. I've even seen links with Christensen as well, to like Sevilla and people like that.
Bit of a case of use it or lose it though, isn't it? Because, I mean, they can't give these guys the games.
Yeah, it's true. I think, well, they've given Zouma a 6-year contract as well today, which seems to be their new policy. Before loaning players out, they're like, hang on, sign this, and then you can go.
I don't see how it works. I don't see how Shawcross and Zouma works at all. That's a recipe for disaster for me. Shawcross had probably the worst season of his career last season. He likes to step out. Kurt Zouma also likes to step out. So I don't really see how that's going to work. I don't understand this deal. Zouma's a really exciting player. He's a great prospect, but I don't think that Stoke is the right destination for him at all. So I'm a bit surprised by this move, but I'm ready to be proven wrong.
There was speculation about Shawcross at the end of last season with Newcastle, I think. Mm. So maybe, I mean, he was terrible last year. I saw him like live a couple of times, and he's just so slow and cumbersome.
Shadow of the player he was a few seasons ago. Really surprising.
Maybe Zuma's going to take his place. I think they're still linked with Martin Zindi as well. So if they get him in, I mean, him and Zuma could form a pretty decent centre-back partnership.
What I find surprising, and what might be a good thing for that, is the season before last, when Shawcross and Philip Walshide were a partnership, that actually worked quite well. And Walshide's a bit like Zuma in the sense that he's a big guy, very good in the air. Maybe if Zuma can step back a bit.
Shawcross is a classic English centre-back in that he needs a partner next to him to get the best out of him. It's like John Terry, like Rio Ferdinand, like Tony Adams. You know, he needs the right partner next to him to be at his best. Sometimes it's just hard to figure out what that partner is. I don't think a young centre-back like Kurt Zuma, who's just the most explosive, one of the most explosive players in the league, coming back from an injury is the right person to settle Ryan Shawcross's nerves.
And maybe Mark Hughes isn't the right manager for it either. Mark Wilson famously left Stoke after basically criticising Mark Hughes, saying he couldn't coach defenders. We move on now to Kyle Walker to Manchester City. That's another massive deal that's been completed. £50 million, or if we go back to the wage inclusion as well, £150 million, whatever it is, according to the headlines. Whatever you want to make it, City fans, I know, are a bit annoyed at that. I've had a question from Keegan Blaze, who asks on a Tottenham Hotspur related note, with Kyle Walker's money now burning a hole in Daniel Levy's pocket, what could Spurs do to realistically win the league and get as far as possible in the Champions League the next season?
Well,
the only side yet to make a signing in the summer.
Yeah, it seemed, well, Spurs fans seem quite split on this. I think some fans are sort of losing their minds a bit that no one's coming in and are sort of imploring the board to get their checkbook out and buy someone. And others are a bit more measured and saying, well, Walker's gone, but the big guns are still there. There's not even any speculation, really. Mm. The likes of Dele Alli, Harry Kane, Eriksen, which is a good sign.
What about Manchester United target, Eric Dier?
Well, yeah, there's that. But, I mean, if he does go, I don't think he will, but if he does, that's the two players that are most expendable going for over 100 million in that Spurs starting 11. So
kind of backs up the model, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I think, I mean, Pochettino came out today and said, he basically hinted that Spurs fans shouldn't really expect too much. He was like, we're really happy with our youth academy. You know, we do things different to other clubs. We want to develop players, which suggests to me that there might not be too much business going on at White Hart Lane. I think in terms of a title challenge, it's going to be really difficult because of Wembley, pretty much. The squad depth, I think, is still an issue. I think they do need three players to come in, but whether they do, I'm not sure that's going to happen. Mm. But I think for Spurs, if they keep hold of the team, top four is definitely achievable. They got 86 points last year. And it's, you know, that's a hell of a lot of points to throw away to drop out of the top four. So I think they're all right, but I think the title challenge probably will be beyond them.
I was going to say, priority for Spurs is to stay in the top four for another few seasons, get the stadium build under, then be able to really get aggressive in the transfer market. They can afford to lose Kyle Walker, I think, because Trippier's such a good deputy and...
Good deputy, but is he good enough to take it on full time?
I think he's good enough to. I think Pochettino's good enough to account for that loss. You know, if you had to lose any one of the standout players from that Spurs side, I think Kyle Walker is a one that's okay, and you're getting huge amounts of money for him. They can't afford to lose anyone else. Every day that they get close to the 31st of August without losing either Rose, Dier, Kane, Ali, or Vertonghen or Alderweireld is a win
or
for Spurs, or Eriksen, or Lloris.
Any of them.
every single day is like a new signing for that Spurs side. It's all about keeping hold of those players. So I think as long as they keep hold of those players, manage to stay in the top four, that's a successful transfer window for them.
Do you see any players within the youth setup or players that have been on the bench recently that could come in and fill in the Kyle Walker slot? I mean, Trippier has done well, but his much celebrated five assists didn't come in the biggest games last season. He's not as good a footballer, an all-round footballer, as Kyle Walker. He's much more of a kind of a defensive wing-back who can cross the ball from deep. Do you see anyone on the fringe of the squad that can make the step up a bit like Harry Winks did last season in midfield?
Well, the interesting thing with Trippier is, I mean, they've just given him a new contract, which suggests that they're willing to give him a go as a first-team regular. And if they don't sign a right-back, which I think would be extremely risky, if they don't, then Kyle Walker-Peters, I think, will come up and be second choice. I think he's already 20, so he's getting to that age where he sort of needs to kick on a bit. He's an impressive player. He can play either flank. I do think he's good, and you know, if they don't sign anyone, he will step up.
So there have been a few names linked, like Ricardo Pereira, Joel Veltman.
There's not many.
There's not
That's
many.
The thing.
No, but they're all kind of work in progress that you're gonna.
Yeah, exactly.
To off,
I think they do need someone though, because Trippier is not a direct replacement for Walker by any stretch of the imagination. And last season, before Spurs sort of, you know, got into their stride after Christmas, Walker and Rose are the most important players in that team, because they just bombed on and overloaded their opponents up the pitch with their pace and their stamina. Trippier isn't that kind of player, as you said. He's more of a crosser. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what Spurs do. Pochettino did hint as well that they do have money. They're just not spending it, which, I mean, I don't know. We'll have to see about that. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting few weeks, I think, at Spurs.
Manchester City and Manchester United do have money, and they played a very expensive fixture. The first Manchester derby on foreign soil, one of the big kind of blue ribbon pre-season friendlies of the summer. Obviously, this was a game that was meant to happen last season, but it got rained off in China in the Bird Nest Stadium. It was a bit of an event. Lukaku got a goal to keep the kind of momentum going for him this summer, but it came at the expense of an Edison blooper. Obviously, we saw Claudio Bravo not have the best of time for it in goal last season. Is this anything to worry about for City fans, Nick?
I mean, as long as Edison saves a relatively decent amount of shots,
and
I think
Duvet did make three really good saves during the game.
He made three decent saves during the game, and you know, he came out. It was actually the sort of thing that Joe Hart would do, actually, yeah. Weirdly, not Claudio Bravo. He came absolutely belting off his line. But again, this speaks to Lukaku's a little bit quicker than you expect. He's 6'4" and over 20 metres. He is lightning. Yeah. And Edison obviously just misjudged it.
I think what a finish as well. It's got to be said.
Yeah, really nice at an angle.
Remind me of Aguero.
Yeah, it's a really good finish. But, you know, Lukaku's a great finisher. He gets goals. That's what he does. I don't think it's anything to worry about. It's good to get that sort of like rush of blood to the head mistake out in pre-season.
I think the issue with Edison is he's very inexperienced for a keeper. He's had pretty much 18 months as a number one for a good European side in Benfica, not even in a top league. He hasn't been capped by Brazil. So the pressure is on him, I think, to sort of hit the ground running and prove that he's a better option than Bravo or Joe Hart. He's a very good shot stopper, as we've seen, but it's going to be decision-making that comes to define how he does at City, because Bravo's decision-making last year was horrendous.
Massively. We're going to get onto City a little bit more a little later on, because they are our team of the week that we're going to focus on. But staying on Manchester-related football matters, we've had a few questions, as we always do, about Manchester United and their potential defensive midfield signings. A lot of talk of Fabinho. We won't go over all those old bits of old ground again. But Kev from Red Voices, Manchester United podcast, has asked, why didn't United sign Vidal when they had the chance? Always talk of Nangalan and Matic. He even without a carrot replacement, he's the kind of guy that you could stick in any midfield and just beef it up, wouldn't he?
Yeah, but he's not a defensive midfielder, is he? I mean, he's a presence, he's a big, powerful midfield player, but you put him in front of a back four and I mean, he wouldn't protect them. You know, he's not tactically disciplined, really. He would have been a great signing. It's interesting now, actually, the United, when they're going for players, are seeming to get them. If you look at Woodward's first couple of transfer windows, they're all at sea, really, just scrabbling around, ending up with Fellaini, you know, rather than getting their top targets. That seems to have changed a little bit. Perhaps with the arrival of Mourinho, who players actually want to work under. Vidal would have been great. He'd be great at any team. He's the kind of player that can just adapt to different systems, different leagues. But, I mean, United are fine. You'd rather take Pogba at 23 than Vidal at 28, wouldn't you? So
Ferguson decided to bring back a retiring Scholes instead of fixing that problem in United's midfield. Moyes didn't fix it, got Fellaini. Van Gaal just loves Michael Carrick so much.
And Wayne Rooney in midfield.
Yeah, so he was like, I'm just gonna wait for Carrick to get fit as opposed to buying anyone else. So they only really solved that particular position when they got Pogba. And they're still lacking a defensive midfielder. I mean, we've been saying it for like 8 years about United that they haven't really found the replacement for Keane and Scholes. And that's how, you know, United fans like the football, play the Fergie way, but you need two unbelievable midfielders or three really good midfielders to be able to do it. So, you know, they needed to strengthen there. In terms of, like, is that going to be a deciding factor? Absolutely, but United have got the best midfielder in the league, so, you know.
But does he have the partner to unlock his true potential?
Oh, so what? Like, I've never heard of such a good player needing so many good players around him to do well. He's fine. Like, Herrera's good. Like, I don't see why United fans are so worried about their third midfield player. Like, it's okay. It's fine. The situation is not that bad. It really isn't.
I mean, obviously, it can't be too bad because they have signed Romelu Lukaku. They may have Ivan Perisic coming in as well, and they've got Lindelof at the back. But Lukaku is one of many big moves up front for teams this summer. And, I mean, a lot of people call it the summer of the striker, the season of the striker, all the rest of it. Every top six side now has their first-choice striker pretty much locked down. Obviously, Lacazette's gone to Arsenal. Aguero is pretty much going to stay at City. Liverpool have given the number nine jersey to Firmino as a bit of an unorthodox option. But we've had a few questions through on this. Nozza asks, which top six striker will score the most league goals next season and why? Ollie.
Harry Kane. Why wouldn't it be? He got 29 goals in 30 games last year. Well, yeah, I mean, look, he got 29 goals in 30 games last season. He missed 8 Premier League games and he still romped to the Golden Boot. He's improving every year. He's got 21 goals, 25 goals, 29 goals. I mean, he's the one to beat still, I think. You know, the team is perfectly catered to him. He probably would have broken the Premier League goal scoring record last year if he'd stayed fit for the whole season.
Mm.
So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, he's still the one. Aside from him, I don't know why, but I've got a feeling that Lacazette is just going to catch fire at Arsenal.
Yeah.
I think similar to Kane, he's sort of perfectly suited to that side. And I can imagine sometimes strikers come in from abroad and have incredible first seasons, and I can sort of see him being one of those.
Mm. I mean, I must admit, I look at Lacazette and his consistency at scoring goals in Ligue 1. I mean, you look at Giroud 2 seasons ago.
Patchy,
exactly, streaky. And when Ozil got those, I think you were telling me the other day, Ozil got 18 of his 19 assists before Christmas, but then created even more chances after Christmas and he got one assist because Giroud just stopped scoring. Lacazette's probably not going to have those kind of, you know, outages. So is that where the smart money is, maybe, for people thinking about Golden Boot next year?
I agree with Ollie. You can't see past Harry Kane. I think the other 5 strikers, none of them want to score more goals more than Harry Kane. Harry Kane has this, like he has an illness inside of him which makes him obsessed with scoring goals. He's a maniac. Like, I can't remember a player this, like, focused and determined on scoring goals. He's terrifyingly good. And he's slowly, like, becoming not only the leader at Spurs, but the guy who's going to be like, this is the standard. I'm going to score no matter what. Like, he's a terrifying player. And I think the other players are more talented and have more to their games, but Kane's going to score more goals because Kane wants it more.
This idea that Kane is probably the least accomplished footballer out of him, from what Nick said. You were shaking your head there, Ollie.
Yeah, that's absolute nonsense. I mean, look, Kane, I think, is arguably the most complete out of all of them. You look at him.
Yeah, but in terms of technically, there's better players, there's quicker players, there's stronger players.
I'm not sure. I'll be honest, I'm kind of with Ollie on this one. I think, yes, on pace, but Kane's strength, holding defenders off. And like,
Lukaku's technical. Stronger than Kane.
Yeah, but not Street Fighter. It's,
you know, well, that's what I mean. He's not standout in any of those categories.
I know what you mean, in that he's probably had to work harder than the others to maximise his potential, because 3 or 4 years ago, Spurs fans would have thought there's no chance he's going to lead the line for us long term. And he's just sort of come out of nowhere, exploded into life. But, I mean, he doesn't really have a significant weakness. I mean, he's not quick, but his acceleration, he's got a decent, you know, burst of pace. And he's intelligent enough to compensate for that anyway, so.
I kind of think him and Morata, there's quite a few similarities there.
Yeah, I'd say that as well, yeah. They can both play with their back to goal.
Nah.
They can turn. No?
Nah. I mean, Harry Kane is mental strength.
I'm not saying they got the same cloning that. I'm saying as players, they've got similar attributes, similar...
Kane does everything for Spurs. He'll run the channel. He'll carry the ball out wide. He'll make tackles. He does everything. He's a machine. He's an unbelievable footballer.
I think Morata does all that as well. I'll be completely honest. We'll have to see. Look, fortunately, the season is just around the corner, so I cannot wait to see how all these players go. We've had another question on that exact point from Pepperoni. Finn and Crispy is the handle on Twitter. What an arrangement of words. They've said the Premier League now has some of the best set of strikers in all of Europe, in all of the world. But which forwards would you say are even more elite, and which ones would you like to see come to England next?
Well, Neymar, Ronaldo, Messi, like, you know.
Is your favourite ice cream vanilla as well?
Lewandowski, Ousmane.
I would love to see.
Ousmane Dembele, Antoine Griezmann. Griezmann was supposed to come to the Premier League, remember? Yeah. We could be in class. A situation where it was actually Lukaku still at Everton, Griezmann at United.
Mm. But there was loads of hype last season about the Bundesliga had Aubameyang, and Lewandowski, and Modesta. Which league do you think has got a better set of strikers than the Premier League for next season?
I don't think there is one.
Yeah,
I don't think there's some unbelievable striking talent in the Premier League next season. It's going to be wicked.
I'd like to see Cavani in the Premier League one day. soon, because I can imagine him sort of petering out when he hits 30.
I kind of think Lukaku has put that to bed, because I think United were always the side most interested in him.
Well, in fact, Arsenal, Chelsea and United have bought strikers for the next 8 years, sort of, you know, solves that issue. But
Well, Nick mentioned a player just then who is our big rumour of the week, and that is Neymar to Paris Saint-Germain. You might have heard about this one. Have you heard about this one? So basically, Paris Saint-Germain, big money Paris Saint-Germain, not content with signing Dani Alves from under the nose of Manchester City, they now want to ruin Barcelona's summer by paying the release clause, which for players like Neymar are meant to be unpayable. They want to pay the release clause for Neymar in a deal that could be worth, including wages, about £500 million. Ridiculous. Yeah, I don't really know where to start with this, because we talked about how big a signing Bonucci to Milan was, but this would be like, this would be one of those deals that happens, and it would be like a landmark in football for all eternity. This is mass. This is like Figo to Real Madrid-esque, kind of like changing the kind of direction of football type thing going on. So, I mean, I'm babbling already because I don't know how to explain and understand this transfer. So, Nick, help me. Help me here. Is this the right move for player and club?
No, of course not. It's the biggest willy-waving status signing of all time. PSG have decided this summer that they're going to, that they're like, we've made the Champions League semi-finals a few times. Why isn't everyone talking to us about, like, we're buying Munich, Barcelona and Juve?
And given what Neymar did to them in that second leg, maybe they're thinking, exactly, if we sign him, he can't do that again.
He can't do that again. But this is status. They got Dani Alves, like, off Pep, which must have made Pep furious, because then he had to go give £50 million to Daniel Levy, and nobody wants to do that. And now they want to go after Neymar. When the story broke, everyone was like, "Nah, not that's just not true."
Yeah. And then every day it's like, "Oh, this is happening."
It's closer and closer. €222 million release clause, apparently. I mean, from Neymar's point of view, I don't know what he'd do at PSG. He's at the perfect club already. He's learning off the best player of all time in Messi. He's got a really mobile striker in front of him in Suarez. He played really well last year, but got really unlucky in terms of end product.
It's a reverse Ronaldinho, though, isn't it? Because they signed him for PSG.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think it's right for PSG. I don't think they need Neymar. I mean, it's great to have Neymar, no matter what club you are, but I don't think it's particularly fulfilling a need that they have. The rumours are that they're signing him just to keep Verratti happy, but what? You're going to spend £500 million to keep your centre mid happy.
How good would it be if every summer they just sign another bit of Barcelona, just like, Verratti, you can have Barcelona here.
Yeah, exactly.
We can bring it to
just
you.
Just sell Verratti and buy Mbappe. Like, what's going on here?
Mbappe in midfield, what do you reckon now? I'm joking. But Ollie, I mean, this seems like quite a silly thing to bring up, but it is in our checklist of things we've got to do on these things. We're a for a bunch here at Squawker. Neymar, what are his strengths and weaknesses?
Yeah, Oli, what are Neymar's strengths and weaknesses?
Just on the whole thing, the only reason Neymar would go there is so he can actually become the main man at a club. Because as long as Messi's at Barcelona, no one's going to get near him. He's the best player in the world ever.
And there is a sense that
he's still amazing.
Suarez and Messi are busy mates, and Neymar's not quite in the fold in the same way that he was previously.
I mean, that seems to be the driving factor, I think, if he does go there, the fact that he'll be the top dog. But yeah, I mean, he doesn't need to go there. There's no need for him to go there. La Liga is a much better league than Ligue 1. His strengths and weaknesses, well, I mean, yeah, as you mentioned,
third best player in the world.
PSG probably just looked at the highlights of that 6-1 battering and like, right, yeah, we need to buy him. Because wasn't it after 87 minutes, he got 2 assists and a ridiculous free kick?
Yeah.
Like, he took that game and was just like, nah, we're going through, and dominated it. But yeah, he'd be the kind of player that would, you know, for this PSG project that's 6 years running now, he'd be the one to really elevate it, I think. But yeah,
best dribbler in the world, one of the quickest players, one of the best finishers, always delivers on the big scene.
I was going to say, of all the players that pressure gets the best out of him, he just seems to thrive.
Mentally, unbelievably strong, so quick with the ball.
And if you want someone to step up your marketing department as well.
Yeah, I mean, really nice bloke. And also, he's not even a diver. He wears so many fouls. He's really clever on the ball in the way he uses the ball. He delivers tricks at the right time. weaknesses. I mean, you could probably ask for him to be a bit stronger, but he's an incredible footballer.
He's incredibly arrogant as well, which I love, but it drives defenders up the wall, which might end up with him getting a horrible injury.
He's basically on the path to be the best player in the world in a couple of years when Messi and Ronaldo tail off. So
he's probably the most fun player in the world when he's in full flight.
He's so good to watch as well. Definitely. Like it's you know, from a Ligue 1 point of view, it's like, this is great, you know, but you know, for Barcelona, it'd be such a huge loss. Mm. And you know, they're in a bit of a tailspin at the moment, Barcelona. This must be a bit of a PR disaster for them behind the scenes.
I mean, I was going to ask, how would he reconfigure PSG's lineup? But considering PSG have already got 50 wingers, how would Barcelona reconfigure their lineup without Neymar?
It's a really good question. They'd have to get another left winger, I think, because
it's a shame Arnautovic has gone to West Ham, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, because that was the one. I mean, according to stories today, is that they've put in a £67 million bid for Coutinho. Coutinho would be nice.
Yeah.
But again, there's not really, you don't really get that sort of pacey outlet that Neymar gives you, because he can do the pacey outlet or cut inside.
Messi's more of an Iniesta replacement, isn't he?
Though? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But he can play left wing, so I imagine that would be the case. Or you're going for one up front with Messi in behind Suarez. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't want to be the person tasked with reconfiguring MSN.
Get El Tel back. 4-4-2, yeah. Sorted.
Why not?
I think they'd go all out for Ousmane Dembele, I think, if he went.
Dembele.
He could play either flank. He's pretty much two-footed.
So fun to watch.
Yeah. If they sold Neymar for $200 million and then got Ousmane Dembele and Verratti for about $100 million, then...
You make it sound so easy.
Maybe. It's Football Manager, isn't it? Maybe that would be a good
deal.
They
could make a rogue attempt for Kylian Mbappe as well. Mm. I know he's like meant to be a Real Madrid fan and everything, but money talks.
Yeah. It does. It sure does in football. We usually ask in these circumstances, does the deal make sense and is it likely? But football at this level with this amount of money going on never makes sense. So let's just say that if it happens, wow.
It's looking disappointingly likely.
Yeah. It's disappointing in a football sense, but on just a kind of a I live to see it sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting you brought up Luis Coutinho and the rejected Barcelona bid just then, Nick, because I have noticed a little bit of hypocrisy creeping into the summer transfer chatter. So in response to this bid from Barcelona for Coutinho, Jurgen Klopp came out and said his players aren't for sale, which, fair enough, managers are allowed to say this, clubs are allowed to put their stall out and say no thanks but no thanks. But isn't this exactly what RB Leipzig have said to Liverpool, given their approaches for Naby Keita? And isn't that a little bit cheeky to kind of make that stance and then be like, yeah, but it doesn't matter for us?
Well, if we're getting to semantics, hypocritical would be Klopp saying my players aren't for sale, and I would never approach a player or a club where they after they said that their player weren't for sale. He's not saying that, so I don't think it's technically hypocritical. I think it's very much Klopp's trying to put Liverpool's status back to where it used to be. That's part of his job, what he's doing. And he's probably noticed already that in the transfer market, Liverpool aren't the most attractive proposition for a player. The Naby Keita move would have gone through by now if Naby Keita had been pushing for it. So I can totally understand where Klopp is coming from, and I don't think he's being hypocritical at all.
Yeah, no, as we were saying with Spurs earlier, you know, the fact that none of their big players have left, you know, when you compare it to Modric and all those going in the past, this is, if Liverpool keep hold of Coutinho, this is kind of saying we're getting back to where we feel we should be as a big club. When Barcelona came in for Suarez, that was always going to happen. City with Sterling as well. If they hang on to Coutinho, I think that's a really big sign that they are going in the right direction under Klopp.
I mean, you look at, on paper, a midfield, because he's apparently moving inside to play more of like a number eight role, or whatever you want to call it. Coutinho, Keita, Henderson. That is an incredible midfield. I mean, you've got the kind of ball hog in Henderson. You've got Keita to basically do everything, and Coutinho to add that little bit of sparkle in the end. That's just...
Yeah, but Keita doesn't want to go to Liverpool.
That's what I meant. Yeah. This is all hypothetical. Yeah. But it's just like you talk about Liverpool wanting to raise their game and kind of keep their players. If they were to keep Coutinho, add Keita, wow. In a somewhat of a sensational moves, that would be pretty spectacular. Yeah. But another bit of Barcelona transfer news. Apparently, they've offered Rafinha... brother of Thiago Alcantara, to Arsenal.
Why not?
Yeah, do you reckon that would make sense for the Gunners? There is talk of how they're going to replace Sanchez, how they're going to replace Cazorla as well. Rafinha is quite a versatile player, very good on the ball.
Feels like a natural replacement for Cazorla. According to some rumours, Wenger's happy to let Elneny go, which I'm a bit confused by, because Elneny's a very dependable player to bring on in certain situations.
Not a centre-back, though.
not a centre back. God, he was awful against Bayern in that preseason game. They ran him. Lewandowski ran him ragged. Poor sod. But could be an interesting move. Rafinha's not exactly getting a lot of game time at Barca.
Another one that's played right wing back as well to add to this.
Another one who's played right wing back. So interesting. Is he going to be as good as Cazorla? I think it's the sort of thing that's worth a punt. If Barca are saying, "Here, can you take Rafinha off us?" because he's obviously because he's kicking up a fuss and he wants game time, and they don't know how to solve that problem. So it's worth a shot for Arsenal because they have got a midfield problem. They could do with another body in there who's a ball player. So yeah, why not?
Ball playing midfielders, Manchester City, Pep Guardiola, forever. We're going to move now to the team focus, which is Manchester City this week. I've asked both Ollie and Nick to bring with them two things they've noticed about City that could do with a little bit of fix and their suggested solutions. Who would like to go first?
Yeah, okay, I'll go first. Well, it's something I've noticed that no one else might have noticed, but City's defence is pretty ropey.
Controversial takes here in sport.
Luminary.
I mean, yeah, we even saw against United, it's pre-season, sure, but still, the same problems remain. You know, defensively, they're not good enough. It looks like Kolarov is on his way now, which means Guardiola...
He's pretty much gone, yeah.
Yeah, so Guardiola's shipped every single one of his fullbacks from last season, which I quite like. It's sort of saying, yep, I inherited this lot and they're gone, they're not good enough. Mendy, they've bid for, I think, 45 they wanted, and Monaco are like, nope, give us the Kyle Walker money, we want that. I can see Bertrand possibly as well going there, perhaps, but...
There's talk of Danilo as well. He's been linked with Chelsea but he's, you know, another one that's in the mix.
They basically need two defenders. Well, three defenders. They need two left backs and a centre back, I think, and possibly even a defensive midfielder, because if you take Fernandinho out, Fernando's not good enough.
Yaya Toure. Made a glass, so he's never going to play.
Yeah,
but still need another right back.
Yaya doesn't run enough. Yeah.
They got rid of Zabaleta and Sanya. They've only got Kyle Walker. I know there's the Danilo rumours, but they need another right back as well.
They're really light at the back, which sort of makes... I mean, Bernardo Silva is an incredible signing, but I remember when it happened, everyone was like...
another one.
Is that what you needed? You know what I mean? It was just, they don't need him at all. He's great and everything, but they need to just fix that defence before they do anything. And it's getting closer to the season, and they haven't really solved that issue yet. And we spoke about Edison earlier. You know, he's a young goalkeeper. He's pretty inexperienced at, you know, top level. He's going to need a good defence in front of him to be able to thrive. And at the moment, that City defence is still pretty holy.
I must admit, if they could guarantee that Vincent Kompany would stay fit, I think Kompany and Stones with time would be great.
But you can't guarantee that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what is your problem to begin with,
Nick? What's my problem?
What's
my issue? First problem is Sergio Aguero for me. 20 goals in 31 Premier League games last season, created just four fewer chances than Leroy Sané last season, 63% take-on success, 82% pass accuracy for a striker, which is good. Pep, towards the end of the season, tried him in the 10, and now he's refusing to discuss his future. So there's no new contract, which has been signed by Aguero. He's probably the greatest striker the club's ever had.
Going by goals per minute, he's the best striker the Premier League's ever had.
Yeah, I mean, an astonishing player. Even if he is a flat track bully, you need flat track bullies in a league like the Premier League, because every game is so damn tough. Yeah. It's not like for facing Getafe away, Pep. Okay, these teams actually play. You know, they actually bother.
Wild Brexit Nick appears.
You know what I'm talking about, though. The golfing class is nowhere near as big in the Premier League as it is in La Liga or the Bundesliga. So he needs to sort that situation, because Aguero also holds a lot of sway in the City dressing room. You know, he's regarded as a bit of a legend. Him, Touré, Kompany, they're the legends of that club. They're the ones who've made it, you know, what it is today.
They stayed on for the sequels.
Yes, so he needs to solve that problem. And I get it, he doesn't want to play him every game, but is he just going to bench Aguero all season? It makes no sense. Or either cash in the chips that you've got with Aguero, or he deserves to be treated better, I guess is what I'm saying. And I think
your solution isn't to get a player more suited to Guardiola, it's to get clarity on the Aguero situation.
Get clarity on it. Get clarity on it, because I think... But this is the sort of thing Guardiola always manages really, really badly as well.
He doesn't get strikers, does he?
He doesn't get strikers. B, I don't think he deals with situations of footballing respect, in inverted commas, very well.
Yeah.
Footballers need a lot of massaging. Pep is, you know, he's a bit of a hardline manager. But if he was treated by his manager the way that he's treating Aguero right now, towards the tail end of his career at Barca, and maybe go to Roma, which is exactly what he did. So I think this... Aguero deserves a bit of a break, especially after so much criticism last season and being taken, chopped in and out of the side. He still did pretty, pretty well for him.
Mm-hmm. Ollie, what's your second observation / criticism / problem to solve?
Yeah, well, again, going back to the friendly, City's probably brightest spark in that game was 17-year-old kid called Phil Foden, who's basically...
Stockport-born and bred.
Yeah, Guardiola was... I mean, I've never seen a manager... Well, I've never seen him come out and praise a player as much as he did with Foden. It was quite eye-catching to see really how, you know, effusive he was in his appraisal of his performance. Basically, my thing with City is, you know, are they going to become the same as Chelsea in terms of having a brilliant youth setup? Their facilities are incredible. They've got a lot of very, very good young players coming through. But if they're spending 50, 60 million per attacking midfielder, how are these guys sort of going to get in? We've seen they've got a link with Girona in La Liga, who seems to be getting a lot of loan players off City. Mm. So it's sort of, it seems to be becoming a bit of a Chelsea Mark II. At City, yeah. And The Independent did an article yesterday on Jadon Sancho perhaps wanting to go to Arsenal or Tottenham because he sees, you know, more chance of breaking into the first team there. So,
and he's very highly rated. And interestingly, yeah. I know this is all social media, blah, blah, blah. He's deleted all of his Manchester City-related images on Instagram today. Mm. So in the modern world of modern football, that's quite a big development.
Big no-no.
So yeah, that's the thing. I mean, City have always had quite a good academy. If you think of the mid, you know, sort of 2000s.
Joe Martin, I mean, sorry.
Yeah, Daniel Sturridge as well came through. I think it's just, you know, Pep is renowned for developing players. And I get that City is under huge, huge pressure, particularly after not winning anything in the first season. So he's going to spend as much as possible to win stuff. But there also needs to be this continuity of players coming through the academy, or they're going to end up like Chelsea and see people like Solanke leave. You know, it's going to be a similar situation.
Mm. Nick, what's your second observation on City?
Very simple one, rotation up front. I know there's a lot of games to play, but he's going to have to keep a lot of pieces happy in that side.
Goes back to what Ollie was saying about Silva, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, Leroy Sané, Raheem Sterling, Kevin De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, Gabriel Jesus, Sergio Aguero, David Silva. Just unbelievable array of talent, yes, but you're going to have to keep a lot of pieces happy in all of that. So that's something he needs to judge very, very carefully going into the next season, something that needs to be looked at. And he needs to... What always seems to work in the Premier League with the way that the games come thick and fast is that you have your starting 11 and you have your backup players. Mm. Is he going to be able to do that? That's the question.
Did you mention Patrick Roberts there as well?
I did not.
Yeah, because this is another thing on youth. They've got a lot of exciting attacking players coming through the ranks. I mean, I don't want to make a cross-Manchester comparison, but you look at the reason why managers like Louis van Gaal and Mauricio Pochettino bring through youth is they kind of leave the gaps in their team that when there is an injury, they have to look to the kids. They kind of force themselves to have to go there.
Mm.
I mean, whether it's Pep or whether it's cheeky Bagiristein's transfer policy, there aren't going to be those gaps at City, are there?
Yeah, I think it does sort of come... If Pep had won stuff last year, there might have been a bit more breathing room for him to sort of experiment a bit more this year. But he knows full well now... He spent over 300 million that he needs to win at least two trophies, I think, really, to, you know, to sort of ensure that he stays there for 3 years.
Mm. Well, another manager who's been in the spotlight this summer for his signings and also his move to a new club is Marco Silva. We've had a question through about Watford and their transfer business from Dave, who I think is a Watford fan, going off his Twitter picture, which I think had Chalabar with a newly signed Watford shirt, so very nice. He wants to talk about Watford and how they are quietly doing some very good business and looking like they have learned from their mistakes in previous seasons, mainly buying young and English and not silly money on a load of mercenaries that haven't got the kind of substance to hold it together when times are tough. What have you made of the Hornets so far this season?
Really impressive. I mean, I wouldn't have expected it, to be honest, because they have made loads of clangers in previous seasons. Central midfield was the one area of the pitch where they needed strengthening. Mm. Etienne Capoue on his day is fantastic, but he can be a bit patchy as a player. Ben Watson was nowhere near good enough for where Watford want to be.
And I know they had him on loan for the second half of last season, but they've now fully confirmed Tom Cleverley is going to stay permanently. They brought in Will Hughes, they brought in Chalabar as well.
Yeah, so they've brought in Will Hughes, Chalabar and Cleverley. So they've got a holding man, a ball rotation man, and someone who can drive on top of Capoue. I think Cleverley will be the one who...
Poor- poor Capu driving all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. Capu's just a bit of an all action hero, and he's great to watch. I suspect Cleverley will be the one that drops out from there, but he's a great option to have.
But he can play wide as well. There's loads he can do.
Yeah, he's a very versatile player. Kiko Femenia's a really good pickup as well. We mentioned there's not many right backs going. They've just got themselves a right back. Really smart. They're one or two signings away from having possibly the best transfer window in the Premier League relative to a club status. They need a striker to go alongside Dini. It'd be really interesting to see who they pick up.
You look at the business they did last season. They were very unfortunate with injuries. You've got, okay, he's not the most selfless player going. Mara Zarate on his day can create absolute moments of genius. They've also got Roberto Pereira as well, former Juventus. He was injured for large patches of last season. So they actually do have kind of lurking just off the radar some really big players in that squad already as well, are they?
I think the interesting thing from Watford's point of view is that the owners have clearly decided that a change of tack is needed, which I think is spot on, because you look at it last season, they finished 17th, I think, and you had two dreadful teams in Sunderland and Middlesbrough go down, and a whole team who were in absolute disarray until Silva came in. And I think the owners realise as well there's been so much chopping and changing with their managers and the players, they need some continuity, and it seems as if they're willing to sort of make Silva their man to build around. And there seems to be finally like an identity at Watford now. They're buying young and English, and they're trying to sort of change their mentality, which I think is long overdue, really, because last season they survived, but I can't even remember winning a game. United is the only game I remember them winning.
I remember them beating Arsenal at the Emirates. That was their match of the season.
That was the best they played all season. Yeah. I mean, it's a shame they didn't get Tammy Abraham. I know they were in for him, but a young English striker would be great for them to pick up. There's not many names available. Also, Jacob Murphy got picked up by Newcastle. That'd been a really interesting player for them to buy. But I think they should go. They need another striker. I think they should go out for Lucas Perez all out. Because
that's a great shout.
Arsenal's just around the corner. He's still only 28. He's got a massive point to prove. He's got a great mentality. He looked good for Arsenal whenever he played. For whatever reason, Wenger's decided doesn't like him. He's given his number 9 shirt to Lacazette, so he's clearly available. You might be able to get a cut-price striker who can get you 10 to 15 goals and make the difference between bottom half and top half.
I mean, on the same note, Loic Remy.
Loic Remy might be a great pickup for Watford. Yeah. I think his wages are quite high because he's always moved on free transfers, but it could be a great shout for
and
them.
And his fitness record isn't too great.
Isn't amazing, but it's worth a shot. Someone to be a foil to Dini.
Well, we've picked a couple of players out there that we like the look of for Watford, but looking generally around Europe, we're going to turn now to our Squawker Scout section, where we each pick a player based on the numbers from last season that's caught our eye and we think they'd be an interesting player to focus on, even the transfer market, or just keep an eye on for next season. Nick, I'm coming to you first.
Juan Bernat.
Mr. Take-ons,
backup right back. Left back for Bayern Munich. There's no way he's overtaking David Alaba, who is one of the best left backs in the world.
Footballers. One of the best footballers of all time.
Fantastic player. But, you know, it seems that Marcelo and Felipe Luis ahead of him for left back pecking order. Anyway, Juan Bernat, he's still only 24 years old. He's ridiculously quick. He's really good technically. He had the second highest pass accuracy at Bayern last season for 10 plus appearances. At Bayern, okay, they're just all they do is pass. His tackle stats are strong. He wins 45% of his headed duels over the past three seasons, despite being absolutely tiny. Other positives, his contract's running out in two seasons. He's not one of the Bayern guys who's stuck down until 2024 or whatever when they hold up the shirt.
He's shown a little bit of openness to maybe going somewhere where he could be a first choice player as well.
I mean, he needs games. He's been second choice. He's Spanish, so he's never going to get a game for the national team, probably, because he's not good enough to be this first choice Spanish national left back. So you're getting more games out of him then. His injury record's fantastic. The longest layoff he's ever had is 2 months, and in his whole career, so good injury record. You know, there's not really many downsides to this. It's the perfect for any club looking to pick up a really, really good left back with a point to prove, who might just improve your club. I mean, you think Chelsea or City would be perfect for him. I don't know if he'd be physical or tall enough for Antonio Conte, but you can see Pep Guardiola maybe being interested, although he'd be a hell of a contrast to Benjamin Mendy. But any club out there looking to get a slightly better left back, if Arsenal hadn't bought Kolasinac, Juan Bernat would have been a great alternative for Wenger. you know, he's too good for Bayern's subs bench. So I think there should be a club looking out to get him.
So Nick's picking the Spanish Andrew Robertson there. who are you picking out, Ollie?
I'm picking a little-known Eredivisie winger.
Hello.
That's my one. Sam Larsson is this 24-year-old Swedish international. He's sort of one of the players that Sweden are building around post-Zlatan. He's a really interesting player statistically. Last season, he was phenomenal for Heerenveen, who aren't, you know, a particularly great side in Holland. He got nine
they've
goals.
Had the moments in the past, Ollie, I'll have you know.
Yeah, they've had some great players. That's the thing, actually. Heerenveen are very good at developing players. He's been there for 3 years, I think, and sort of steadily improved. But yeah, last year, he got nine goals, 12 assists, 71 key passes, 93 take-ons. In Holland, he's very good at set pieces in terms of delivery and scoring them himself. He scored a free kick on his debut for Sweden, actually, in a World Cup qualifying game, I think. And he's very skillful. He's sort of one of those players that he plays as an inside forward on the left and sort of cuts in and roams around. But he's got a lot of tricks up his sleeve as well. And I think he'd be a really good signing for a sort of mid-table, maybe even top half Premier League side.
Kind of Swansea or something like that.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I don't know if he's quite small. I don't know if he'd fit the Tottenham, you know, sort of mould, but he'd be a player that would come within Spurs' sort of budget. But yeah, he's one that I think he's been linked with Celta Vigo. That's the only team that I've seen
a bit of smart business this summer as well.
Yeah, they've got this sort of Scandinavian thing going on at the moment. They've signed a lot of Scandinavian players. But yeah, he's one that I think could cut it in the Premier League if he joined. He's at that age now where I think he needs to leave Holland and test himself in a bigger league. And yeah, I think he's a good player.
Fair enough. I'm going to go to France for my one. And a player who I was aware of, but I did a little bit more research into when I was writing a piece on physical wingers this week. And it was about Perisic and kind of wingers that are a bit more just tricky. They've got a bit more to them. And this man certainly has for a winger. He's 6'4". He plays for Cannes in Ligue 1. It's Ronnie Rodelin, everyone's favourite super-sized winger. He's 27. And, I mean, the stats say all, really. Last season, he won 4.29 aerial duels per 90, which is probably what you'd expect for a guy measuring up at 6'4". But he also completed 1.31 take-ons per 90, 61% take-on completion rate. That's nothing to sniff at. Won as well 1.77 ball winning actions per 90 minutes. That's tackles and interceptions combined. If you go on YouTube and you watch the highlights of this lad, it's amazing. The way he moves his body is absolutely sensational. He's like the most mobile big man I've ever seen. He's quite kind of willowy built, and he just throws himself around at the ball. It's finishes in the air, not even with his head, like whipping his foot out of nowhere. Ollie, after this podcast,
where's he going?
I don't know where.
That's
he is.
That's
all
I want to know.
I just want him to be on TV more. I don't care who he's playing for. I just want to see more of him.
Arnautovic replacement.
Oh, that's a shout, isn't it? Ooh, 1 inch taller than the man as well. So there we go. Maybe something to look forward to next season, Stoke, if you're listening. We're going to move now to a little quick round of Would You Rather. The first two questions are related to replacements at two big clubs this summer up front. And Nick, I'm going to come to you first. Ibrahimovic or Lukaku?
Lukaku.
Ollie?
Yeah, Lukaku.
Oh, interesting. Morata or Costa?
Right now, I think Costa for me.
Costa.
Fair enough. Coutinho or Keita?
Keita. He plays more than 8 weeks a year.
Coutinho.
Oh, split decision. Neymar or Verratti?
Neymar.
Neymar.
Fair enough. Relegation and a trophy or mid-table forever and no success?
Relegation and a trophy. It's all about the glory.
Relegation and trophy. Let's ask Wigan.
Fair enough. United's business or City's business this summer?
United's business. Lindelof is a great pickup, which has gone a bit under the radar, I think.
Ollie?
United's business.
Really?
Yeah, I just think there's too many question marks over Edison. Walker is a good signing. Silva, they don't need. He's great, but they don't need him. They haven't addressed their issues, I think.
I hope there's a City fan somewhere taping this, and when they win the league, they will play it back and be like, ha, 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 showed you all. Or a United fan listening back going, ha, they were right. Anyway, moving on now to the final questions of the podcast. We're going to wrap it up with these quick questions from our listeners. Once again, thank you very much for sending in your questions. They're always appreciated, and they're always fantastic as well, yeah. It must be said. First question from Ahmed Youssef, who asks, what's the point of Premier League clubs scouting their analytics departments, their academies, their coaching setups, if the answer to all their problems is to spend big on obvious targets? And I think he's picking out West Ham for this one.
Yeah, the point is they're turning it into a profit-making scheme, basically. You look at Chelsea, they've invested so much in that academy and no one's come through in the last 10 years, yet they're turning a profit on all these guys. It's quite sad to see, I think, that you know these players, a lot of Chelsea's young players have been playing for England brilliantly this summer, and they're just not going to play for Chelsea. They'll end up going on loan 3 or 4 times and then eventually, after impressing elsewhere and being given a chance elsewhere, be sold for, you know, 10 million plus. So I think that is basically what I think is the issue. I touched upon it earlier with City perhaps going in the same way. It's an interesting one. I mean, even United, you know, they had Pogba on their books, let him go, bought him back for 90 million. There was talk that they were going to do the same with Michael Keane as well, obviously for a lot less, but...
Everton still paid a fair bit for him.
Yeah. I mean, the issue is there's in the Premier League, there's such a big, you know, chairman expect trophies and they expect teams to, you know, to actually win stuff, that the managers are under such pressure that they don't have time to put these young players in, which results in them going elsewhere and making their name. But yeah, I mean, that's basically the issue. And it's good to see teams like Tottenham sort of, I know it's kind of enforced because of budgetary things, but actually giving youth a chance, because at Chelsea, they're not getting it.
It reminds me of what Wenger said. I'm sorry, Rob Holding didn't cost £50 million. You know, this is what fans want. How many Spurs fans are so frustrated about the lack of signings at Spurs? Simply Spurs' Twitter account is making a meme a day about Spurs not signing players. Are you kidding me? They're the second best team in the country. Like, you know, I know it's a joke and everything. I get that. But there's an expectation to sign players. If you don't sign players, what are you doing? That's what football's about. It's kind of a lose-lose situation for the clubs. I think Spurs are going about their business very, very well. And I think other clubs that are signing players, whereas maybe they should be promoting academy kids, they're clearly only in it for the revenue. Peter Kenyon is a revenue genius. He set it up.
In terms of the scouting thing that Ahmed asked about as well, that's another interesting one, that Premier League clubs have invested so much in their scouting departments. They've got scouts all over the world, but they're just buying players off the back of a good season. Monaco is the perfect example. Chelsea buying Bakayoko after one good year, and City trying to get Mendy after one good year. I think, you know, there's so much money in the Premier League now that they can afford to go for these guys who have played well for 1 or 2 years rather than find the next big thing, which is what teams like Monaco are doing.
It's why I was almost surprised that Chelsea didn't sign Bellotti at the end. Like, one hot season, they go, yeah, 100 million, we'll take him. But moving on now to a related question, but actually quite a lot about transfers, probably because the window is open. The football hipster asks, what works out best, loaning players, selling them, or inserting buyback clauses?
Depends what your goal is. If your goal is to, you've got a player, you can't give him the playing time that he needs, but you want a world-class player to come back through whatever scenario, then loaning him is, you know, a good solution, but probably buyback is better, because then you can sell him for a bit of money now and then you'll be able to get him back at an affordable price later, which nobody else can touch. If you're looking to just make money and put him in the shop window, then loaning is obviously the best approach. It's a bit of a difficult one. I know that clubs are about it, but I think it really depends on what the club's approach is and what priority they want for their club.
I think it's interesting that Chelsea have put a buyback clause in Chalobah's deal.
Oh, because, yeah, good point.
Because they've been burnt a few times in the transfer market when they sold Lukaku and they sold De Bruyne and they couldn't get him back. I think, they might have done it with lesser players, but Chalobah's the first one I've noticed that they've been like, yeah, if he comes good, we're getting him back.
And they've loaned Loftus-Cheek, haven't they?
Yeah.
That's a loan deal, so that's really interesting. So there must be someone at Chelsea. Chalobah must have forced a permanent deal, but there's obviously someone at Chelsea who rates Chalobah as much as they should, which is quite interesting.
David Borland asks, again, a related question on this. Who would you say has the best academy in Europe for player progression and chances in the first team at the moment? He asked this with the preface of Le Messier has kind of lost its magic of late. So what would you say is the best club with the best academy bringing players through and giving them a chance in the first team?
Well, Ajax got to the Europa League final with pretty much an academy team. Yeah. So, I mean, they're ones to look at. Again, though, I mean, at Ajax, if you're good enough, you'll come through. I mean, I don't think their players are necessarily better than Chelsea's, but Ajax and Chelsea are just operating completely worlds apart. Mm. So the players are going to get the chance to come through there.
Mm. It's like when people talk about the Bundesliga and how they brought through loads of young talent over the last 20 years. It's because basically there was a massive financial crash in German football and they couldn't afford to buy players, so they had to make them instead. So, necessity is the mother of invention, isn't it?
In Germany, the FA and the league work so much closer together than the English FA and the Premier League. So there's more of a sort of, it's more of a two-way street. Mm. Whereas the Premier League, it's his own entity.
Mm. Ollie's saying Ajax. Have you got a pick there, Nick?
Bayern are doing pretty well. But yeah, Ajax by a country mile. It's, you know, they went for a system. They've put, absolutely backed the kids, and it's paid off. And they're only going to get better every season. So watch out for Ajax next season.
I'm going to throw a curveball based on the whole idea of learning players, buyback clause and the rest of it, and bringing them through and giving them a chance to the first team. Real Madrid.
Yeah, good shout. Yeah, and also, well, they've bought a lot of their young Spanish talent, but it very much seems like Zidane is keen on giving players from the academy chances, and why not, you know, because you put them in that side, they're learning from some of the best players to have ever kicked the ball.
It's a good smokescreen as well when he finally does promote his children who are in the academy to first.
Yeah.
No one can accuse him of favourites and go, oh, I gave these 50 lads a chance as well. So,
he sold Enzo, didn't he?
Yeah.
He sold Enzo.
Ruined the joke, Ollie. You can't be saying that. Come on.
Brutal.
Absolutely brutal. But sticking on the topic of Real Madrid, we've got a question through from a Real Madrid fan account on Twitter, Merengues on Mike, who asks, how important are stats really? Now, he didn't give any context to this question. I think it was just a general kind of talking point. But I was thinking, over the last 2 years, we've had it a little bit in this podcast room from certain people and from certain arguments. Zinedine Zidane not getting the credit for what he's done at Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. He's a fraud, he's a fluke, all the rest of it. And to some extent, the numbers haven't pointed out that Real Madrid are a great side. So I kind of think, because it's a Real Madrid fan account, it's quite a general question. I thought maybe that's an interesting angle to come at it from. None of the numbers were on Zidane's side. Does that make us question something about how we use stats, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very important to point out Squawker's place in terms of doing this, which is we make all of the stats that Opta collate available for stats for football fans to interpret as they choose and compare. But at no point are we trying to say that this stat means this player is better than this player. What's very, very important to note is that Opta do not collect off-ball data. In fact, there's no website where you can commercially get off-ball data or sort of obtain off-ball data. That's all either the clubs who have it or companies like Prozone, where you have to pay a hefty subscription and then you're not allowed to distribute it publicly. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to note that straight away. So we're not collating all the information that we could, even though the on-ball information that Opta collate, they do it very, very well. The other thing to note is that football isn't like other sports. If you had to design a sport perfect for statistical analysis and calculating eventuality based on stats or player performance, you would design something like baseball. It's linear, it's event-based, everything is tracked. Football is much more game theory. The reason a player might have not completed a pass might be as much to do with the positioning of his own players than his ability to pass. There's a lot more game theory like within football, which makes it a much more difficult game to track, which is why we take very much the opinion that it's we take some maybe more basic stats, but what we like to do is get a lot of data involved in terms of comparing big chunks of data, so more than 10 games, stuff like that, and really try and compare players over more basic metrics, those sort of things, because I think if you're trying to create the perfect like algorithm to compare one player to another, it's always going to be a difficult task. We have the performance score, which is an on-ball measurement system. As an on-ball measurement system, I think it's excellent, but it doesn't take into account all the off-ball stuff. So I suspect statistically, Zidane's side might be suffering because nobody's picking up with the on-ball stats how well they're doing as a system at blocking potential avenues for passes, etc., etc.
Pretty comprehensive, that one. Any thoughts, Ollie?
No, I'll leave Nick in that one.
Which moves us on to our next question. Bielsa is now in France with Lille. Bembe asks, thoughts on how they will do under him in the upcoming season? Obviously, we saw him at Marseille previously. He was at Athletic Club, very exciting team there. Got high hopes for Bielsa at Lille?
I mean, he's such a sort of difficult character to read, isn't he? There was even talk a few weeks ago that he was going to do exactly to Lille what he did to Lazio last year, which is basically stick around for a week and then leave. I think they've bought something like 13 players this summer.
Interestingly, they've got the guy who was director of football at Monaco buying all these players for him. So if you want a sign of what could happen, he was the guy who was at Monaco when they were signing guys like Mbappe or stuff like that. So
they've sort of mixed. I mean, they've bought from France and South America pretty much. Mm. I don't know if they've got it over the line yet, but Thiago Maia was supposedly joining them, which I think is a really, really interesting deal. I watched him for Brazil at the Olympics, and he was class. He basically sat alongside Renato Augusto, really, really good passer of the ball. I think they're talking like 10 million for him. So Lille have sort of, they realise they've sort of overdone themselves in getting Bielsa, and they've really backed him to sort of turn them back into a Champions League qualifying team. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he does there.
I for one can't wait, because Ligue 1 last season was very fun to watch. Very final question, and it goes back to something we've already talked about on this podcast. Regular question offerer, always good for giving us a question each week. Matt Brownycake asks, given the top managers and players in the Premier League, will this be a season to remember?
I really think it will. I think it's been years and years and years since we had sort of what everyone calls the peak era of the Premier League, when Arsenal and Man United were at each other's throats and Liverpool were in the mix, and it was, and Liverpool and Chelsea hated each other. And I think there's sort of,
I mean, City United almost got there in the Mancini era.
Yeah, I think there's like three little rivalries brewing in the Premier League. There's Liverpool, Arsenal, who are clearly like, they were very, very close last season, and they're toing and froing. They're both quite exciting to watch. Two managers who really respect each other. Those are fun games to watch. Chelsea and Spurs hate each other, and those games have been unreal to watch recently. And United City games have been really, really fun as well.
City and Spurs as well.
Yeah. Ooh, and then you add to that the other clubs that just put spanners in the works. Guys like Everton, guys like West Ham, who have bought really, really well. Any side managed by Tony Pulis ever always cause problems. Like that West Brom side, they're impossible. You know, there's a lot of really awkward sides for the top six teams, to face. I think it could be a bit of a classic, and unfortunately, because that top six seems to be so much more elite and so much better than the rest of the league, I think that's going to make things really, really interesting. I think we'll have some classic games this season.
I think you're forgetting that Wayne Rooney has joined Everton, and now it's
I did not
seven.
Forget Wayne Rooney had joined Everton. that was firmly at the front of my mind.
Do you think it could be one to remember, Ollie?
Yeah, I think so. I saw something on Twitter yesterday where someone said last season was the worst ever Premier League season, which
I've seen that a lot, I thought it was quite bizarre.
I thought it was a really good season. Yeah. Maybe I'm in the minority there, but I think
it depends on what you like, tactics and stuff like that, because a lot of people don't. And I think the whole kind of Chelsea,
there's loads of goals and stuff. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I agree with you, but it is a weirdly kind of widely held opinion that last year was not a vintage year. But I was with you. I enjoyed it.
So. Yeah, so I mean, I kind of expect next season to go along similar lines. I think the top six are pretty much
six. It's going to be Marmite, basically.
Yeah,
you're
going to
love it or you're going to hate it.
The top six is going to be the same. I think you can order them however you like. They're all pretty similar standard. Everton will be in the mix. I'm interested to see how the promoted teams do, because the last few years, the promoted teams have really struggled. Hull and Borough went straight back down last year. So that's going to be interesting
to see.
I've
got high hopes for Brighton and Huddersfield. I really do.
I hope so.
They bought well. But that's something we're going to have to come on to another time on another podcast, because we have already discussed so much and we are running out of time. In fact, we've run out of time. That's the end of the podcast. Nick, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
It's been wonderful, as it always is. Ollie, thank you for coming back on.
Thanks, Greg.
And thank you, listeners, dear listeners, for all your wonderful questions. It's been amazing. It always is. Please send us some more for next week. We're happy to answer them every single time. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.